Hi, I'm here today with Professor Larry Cunningham, who's at GW University here in D.C., and excited to talk to him about the third edition of his book entitled The Essays of Warren Buffett, Lessons for Corporate America. There's a link to where you can purchase the book from where you access this webcast. And I know the first version of this book dates back to 1997 and actually began as a law review conference. Larry, when was your first, did you start with the first version?
The very first version that we used for the Law Review Conference, I guess I put it together in 95, and the conference was 96, and then we first came out with a public edition in 97.
Yeah, I think it's really a great idea because I blog every year when Warren does his annual letter to shareholders. It's something that I know is widely read in our community and also actually among the general population. So what are some of talking about the book in from the perspective of governance and securities laws, that's what the purpose of this podcast is. In terms of corporate governance, what are some of the principles that Warren espouses?
Well, I think probably the most important and venerable set of principles which have appeared in every edition since 1995 is to be careful about one-size-fits-all corporate governance arrangements, and that's a big problem in our system because there's often a flavor of the day, a sort of fad that catches on, and that people think every company ought to have. And he's very cautious against that kind of one size fits all, flavor of the day kind of thing. Each company has a different situation, a different set of needs, different dynamic between management and directors, different shareholder demographics. And so you have to take all those kinds of things into account when you're designing a governance structure. That said, I think there's one thing that he's always been against, which for every company, were age limits. This was a fashion about 10 years ago when a very large percentage of the Fortune 500 at the instigation of institutional investors, adopted limits so that directors couldn't be older than 65 or 72 or something like that. And, of course, that would have kicked Warren off his own board and Charlie Munger and three or four other people, too. And I wrote then that would be a disaster and it would obviously be bad for him. So that's something, a universal we should probably all avoid. At the other extreme, he endorses one universal, which is that for all companies, really, that it's probably important for boards when they're evaluating a CEO's performance to do it in regularly scheduled meetings without the CEO present. He points out that just given the human nature of boards, the informal interactions between the directors and CEOs, that it's very difficult if the board is detecting problems with the CEO to try to have a special meeting to talk about him and so on. So he just thinks a regimented program of every 6 months or every year regular reviews of the CEO without his or her involvement is a good idea. But everything else, the flavor of the day stuff and the one size fits all stuff, he warns against. And so that beyond age limits, it's things about whether the CEO and chairman ought to be the same person, whether or not to have a staggered board, and even the degree to which directors ought to be independent of the management and so on. So I think that's the biggest set of venerable principles that he's always offered, the caution against one size fits all.
Are there any issues lately that are new for him regarding governance that he's focusing on?
Yeah, a good essay new to the third edition speaks to the question of risk management, which has obviously been an important topic in the past 5 years since the crisis of 08. And then even a little bit before that, it was a bit of a fashion in corporate governance generally for CEOs to appoint chief risk officers and even for some boards to have risk committees. And the impulse is probably a sound and appealing. It is important for companies to get their risk systems under control and so on, but Buffett insists that the CEO needs to be the chief risk officer. This is a task or a responsibility that simply can't be delegated. It's too important. It's too costly when it blows up. And so at Berkshire, he is the chief risk officer. He's responsible for every derivatives contract, every hedging arrangement that they make. If any of those things blow up, he's responsible. And they have blown up. You know, he bought a whole Berkshire bought a whole company, Genray, that had a nasty book of derivatives business. And as those things became poisonous and costly, and he unwound them, you know, he took the hit. It was all his fault. He admitted it repeatedly in the report, and explained how he was resolving it. But that's, I think, a really important point that we've got a lot of chief risk officers in corporate America now, and quite a few risk committees, and that's probably risky. He even says that, in his opinion, Buffett's opinion, he would consider a board of directors derelict, that's his word, and he italicizes it, if they fail to say that the CEO is the chief risk officer. So I think that's an important topic people ought to pay more attention to. Hmm.
So what about the financial crisis, where the stock market now is at an all-time high? Who does Warren blame for causing the crisis that happened 5 years ago?
Well, just about everybody. It's that old great legal concept of imperi delicto. Everyone is equally culpable. He identifies at the heart of it an excessive exuberance for debt. There's too much leverage in America, both in organizations and corporate America, and in personal balance sheets, and to acquire homes. And so everyone's to blame for the excesses. Government policies that encouraged it, homeowners that did it, banks that peddled it, rating agencies that certified it, and so on. So everyone had a role to play, and he reviews all of that. And I think the fallout, though, contains some lessons still, that the brunt of the financial crisis was borne by the shareholders of the top financial institutions, even though those people were no more culpable than directors and senior management who facilitated the leverage. And so this is a sort of an example of the difference between authority and accountability. Boards and managers had the authority to put a stop to these things or to hedge them better and more effectively. They have not been held accountable. Instead, shareholders who lack that kind of authority have effectively been held accountable. So that's an enduring problem. I think his most recent several years of letters speak to, and as we assembled them in this third edition of the essays, I think that diagnosis is very clear.
So there's always a lot of talk about tone at the top. What about creating a culture of integrity throughout the ranks? What does Warren say about that?
Yeah, I think this is an excellent point, and I mean, it starts right there with the authority to declare the attitude of the senior management and to define the culture of a particular company. And this is sort of the idea that the CEO needs to be the chief risk officer. He's got to set that tone at the top, along with his fellow senior, you know, C-level managers and the board. But he's got to let everyone know where he stands on this. And the way Buffett does it is he sends a biennial letter to his managers emphasizing that the most important job that everyone at the company, 300,000 people, have is preserving Berkshire's reputation. And he's been writing that memo for a couple of decades. And the great quote that comes out of that every year, and I think he said this in congressional testimony and elsewhere, but it goes like this: we can afford to lose money, even a lot of money, but we can't afford to lose reputation, even a shred of reputation. And he's so forceful about this. And I think this is particularly interesting probably for the lawyers listening to this podcast. But he says, look, it's not enough to comply with the law or the letter of the law. We have to apply a stricter test, and it's the New York Times test, that we'd be happy to have all of our activities written up on the front page of a national newspaper in an article written by an unfriendly reporter. So that's the, you know, he calls it the New York Times test. It's a much more poignant test probably than whether you comply with this securities law provision or that accounting rule. And but transmitting that tone at the top is a responsibility that he as a CEO takes seriously and urges other CEOs to do too.
So for Warren, what is the toughest battle to fight when it comes to compliance?
Oh, that's good. I call it the disease of the crowd. In that letter I just referred to that he sends out to his top managers, he acknowledges, he points out that a lot of times when you're looking at a sketchy situation, an employee or some mid-level person will say, look, everyone is doing it. This is the norm in the industry. This is how we underwrite. This is how we collect, and so on. And he says, look, when you hear that kind of response, it's usually an excuse rather than a reason. And it's usually an excuse suggesting that there is no good reason. And he thinks, you know, if that's the reason for taking some business action, it probably shouldn't be taken. But battling that sort of sense that, you know, this is the crowd, everyone's doing it, it's got to be okay, is one of the manager, you know, a serious managerial challenge. And his solution to it, apart from this proselytizing letter that he sends out all the time, is that he tells his top managers, if you have any question or any doubt about some kind of behavior, whether it's, you know, done by everyone in the industry or not, call me immediately. It's sort of a very high-level whistleblower line. And he points out that, you know, if you think you need to call me, the thing should probably not be done. Whatever you're calling to tell me about should probably be halted. So I think that's probably the toughest problem, at least the way Buffett lays it out in the letters, and that's the kind of solution that he offers.
So on the flip side, you've already given an example of Warren owning up to one of his mistakes when investing. But what about the appropriate response when improprieties are actually found?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Admitting mistakes, you know, acknowledging instantly that there's been a problem and offering corrective action is something that it's almost textbook, management or public relations, 101 in America. People are very forgiving of substantive errors or wrongs even. They're relentlessly unforgiving of attempts at evasion or duplicity or, you know, hiding things. You just come out and say, I did it and I was wrong. You know, America will forgive you if you try to hide it under the rug. They will tend not to. And Buffett, in a great letter that he repeats in different ways, points out that that was the story at Salomon Brothers, that great and venerable investment banking firm that got into big trouble in bond, cornering a bond market in the late 80s, had done illegal things and it revealed a bit of some corruption and corrosion in the firm's culture. And when it got caught doing that, it sort of tried to cover it up and deny it and so on. And eventually it was exposed, and that almost killed the firm. Buffett came in, was the CEO for 6 or 7 years, that sort of refurbished the tarnished image. But, I mean, that was one takeaway he got firsthand from that, is that Solomon might still be alive today if it had just said, look, we made a big mistake or several mistakes, and we got to stop doing that. So that's Berkshire's policy, Buffett's policy, and his advice to others is if you discover noncompliance and so on within the firm, you've got to act decisively and publicly to say, this was a problem, we've got it fixed, and we're going to put it behind us. A very commonsensical textbook kind of thing, as I said, but actually doing it is not always easy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this has been great stuff. I mean, he's one of my favorite persons. We asked him to speak at our, I think, second annual conference regarding responsible pay practices, and he's famous for not traveling outside of Omaha. I was actually surprised to see him on The Daily Show last year up in New York. But he gave us a poetic, I got an email response basically saying, no, no one ever asked me to speak because people know I don't travel. But if you don't, I wish I had saved it. I didn't. If you don't ask, you don't get. But if you ask, you don't get. Something like that. Like,
yeah. Oh, he's so clever. He's got a million of them. He's like a Will Rogers of our day.
Yes. Well, this is a great podcast and a great book. So thanks, Larry, for your time.
Thank you, Brock. Thanks very much. All the best.